something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street singing songs and a carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. You better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. You better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. You better stop. Now, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Stop.
The song we open with is profound. It says so much. We look back at a song of this type for what it's worth in the 1960s, early 70s, and realize that a piece of music of this type probably has greater meaning today than when it was written. There are days that my friend Charles Dickens and I don't speak. We don't necessarily touch bases a lot, but we touch bases enough to know we're going through some interesting times. Charles is about 2 years younger than I am. We're both Vietnam veterans. I met Charles some 17, 18 years ago at a blues night out. He's a blues player. That's not what he does for a living. It was his hobby. He doesn't play any longer. But the conversations he and I have on a continual basis are, we share much. Comments he shared that he awoke one morning with another fitful night. Because I can't say I slept, I didn't. I haven't rested in quite some time. He says, I'm usually a sound sleeper, mostly due to mental exhaustion and fatigue, but the restful days are gone since I caught a glimpse of the puzzle many years ago. Charles says he has several afflictions that cause his restlessness, the inevitable onset of age, all the things ricocheting around in my brain. There are external stimuli like where we're headed as a republic and our out-of-control government, to name a few. I recall historical examples and the outcomes of other inattentive republics, replete with slumbering, inattentive, and distracted sheeple. You can understand why Charles and I get along. The same age. We've lived through the same experiences. We're witnessing the same failures. He talks about the fall of the Roman Empire, the collapse of Russia, the rise of the Third Reich, Those and far too many more ought to serve as cause and effect examples of our present direction, in that we hire misrepresentatives who choose to ignore them. Charles, as I, are astounded that our system provides opportunities to correct mistakes, and yet we fail to make that choice. We, the people, fail to make the right choices. We've often heard throughout our lives that we learn from our mistakes, but apparently America has a learning disability. We don't learn poop. We make the same mistakes repeatedly and foolishly celebrate them. Other recent and very personal issues caused Charlie to seriously consider if mankind, if humanity is even worth saving. Thousands of years and countless wars are potent examples of mankind's corruption. Decades of past American events, especially those of the past four, illuminate and exacerbate deeper human issues like our inability to coexist and our insistence on proving that power, in point of fact, does corrupt. And absolute power corrupts. Absolutely. In the words of Lord Acton. Is this all some horrendous experiment gone wrong? Is it simply a sick galactic joke in very bad taste? Did intergalactic aliens in vitro fertilize monkeys and turn them loose on this planet just to watch the mayhem? Has America run amok? My answer to that question is a resounding yes. Society's past attempts at self-correction were abject failures. And yet we're still fighting to redirect our path into the future to prevent another inevitable calamity. And I stand on the forecastle of our sinking ship of state and shout that there is an iceberg ahead. And we shout this and write this and talk to people. A population so distracted by propaganda and lies, it blares into your ear pods, people, telling you what you want to hear. Our alarms go unheeded. My alarms, Charles' alarms, those of Justin O. Smith, some of the other people who've written for my publications for so many years. Many of them are now deceased. You got to remember that it's all free. It's all the other guy's fault. That's the narrative in a pedantic tone. It's all okay with Comrade China Joey at the helm. I mean, China Joey's the salvation of democracy. Look at all he's done for this country.
Yeah.
Racism, white supremacy, classism, other socio-political contrivances, just to further divide citizens into warring factions, of course. They accuse the citizenry, you and I, of treason if we don't drink the fascist Kool-Aid.
If you're not with us, you're Guinness.
You can believe whatever you like, as long as we approve. How's that for freedom of expression, people? Government's here to care for us, if we'll only comply? Mark Twain once says, of all the things I've lost, I miss my mind the most. I don't know about you folks, but I know precisely how Mark Twain felt. Because I, too, have come to question my sanity, my resolve. Charles has referenced this song that we opened this hour with before. Chorus echoes in my mind constantly, even though I try desperately to ignore it. I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everyone look. Everybody look. What's going down? We can find the complete lyrics on the interweb. Oh, they make a very insightful read. It was recorded in 1967. Not long before I headed to NAM. I have an eclectic education and a background in everything from the arts to sciences to literature. Those are the words of Charlie Dickens. He's an autodidactic polymath. Oh, there's pluses and minuses to this collection of information. I know stuff, he knows stuff, but it all causes us to want to speak out against repeating the mistakes made by past civilizations. And the causes and the effects are well documented. And yet we believe that we can control the maelstrom of governmental indiscretions and policy blunders with more legislation to append their recklessness and disregard for our Constitution, as maybe imperfect as it is. But our Constitution is still the best possible guide forward. We've got the map, but people, we fail to follow it because we know better than 38 delegates of foresight who wrote it in 200 years of our history. Again, our Constitution may not be perfect, but it is an excellent foundation. Its authors recognized that it needed to adapt as the national situation changed. And they specified the process to amend it with two-thirds approval and consent. Pretty damn smart, in our opinion, but our misrepresentatives are so egotistical and intently focused on partisan politics that they don't see the cardinal points of the moral compass. You see, the needle is frozen. It is only pointing at oneself. And so Charles' ability to reason makes him question whether he's drawing the appropriate correlations and inferences are simply delusional. We prefer to believe that we're on the right track, which indicates that I'm not delusional. We're not delusional, since we can question our own personal sanity. If we were unrealistic or insane, we wouldn't wonder or care. Then you see these immutable facts trigger memories, similarities to stored information, like the song lyrics that we mentioned and played during the opening of this hour tonight. What about the historical facts of civilizations past? But there's a big minus to all of this, that no one cares to listen. Is the rest of the world so absorbed that they fail to make these connections? Maybe they didn't study or read the classics or history. Maybe they're just along for the ride, passengers on a sinking ship of state. One thing is certain, my friends, when the ship of state goes down, those who are on it are going to scream like a chorus of scorched cats. Oh, you turn on your television, turn on your radio, whatever the case may be, you'll hear a noise in the background. I mean, I read headlines or listen to the propaganda spewing from the media. It's the unmistakable sound of a flushing toilet. It's simple. America has become a turd in the bowl. Caught in the vortex, circling the drain on its way to relegation as a charter member of the Banana Republic Club. Charles keeps reminding anyone who will listen that the unpleasant task before us requires uncommon courage to reach into the bowl and rescue America before it goes under. Charles' side comment was, I know it's a bit graphic, but I've got your attention. Can you imagine reaching into that toilet? You know, a few loyalists worked diligently to awaken the slumbering sheeple to the impending doom. A few loyalists. Charles is one. I like to consider myself another. And there are others of us out there. But the question I continue to pose is anybody listening? And if they're listening, are they paying attention? And with the things that they're learning and the things that you're challenged to learn, are you doing anything with it? Are you making a difference in your home, in your family, in your neighborhood, in your community, your city, your towns? Because the flock of sheeple seems to be mesmerized by their portable propaganda portals, unswayed by anything contrary to the reassuring pabulum of empty, unfillable promises and media doublespeak. Doublespeak? That's a nice two-word statement for bullshit. My friends, we are so enamored of these portable propaganda portal devices that we ignore everything. We ignore our safety and our security. Charlie writes that he recently almost ran over a pedestrian crossing against a red light because he was walking and texting. The guy was a cell phone zombie. Driving home from an appointment recently, he was nearly broadsided by a person texting while driving. I see this on a continual basis. The thing, interesting thing in Arizona is they made it a law that you could not be texting while you were driving. People don't care. And I get out here in the car, they don't stop at stop signs. Coming out of the side streets as I'm going down the main street in my neighborhood, and they're just running right out. They're not stopping. They're running red lights. I have never seen or read about so many accidents in my life, and in almost every case it's because of this very same circumstances. You know, there's a minute fraction. These two examples I've just given you from Charles, they're a minute fraction of the examples of America's obsession with these altars of information where we pray. Yeah, the cell phones. No one's got the strength to back away in deference to their imminent danger. We know what's right, but we're addicted to the messages. We are junk information junkies. We drank the Kool-Aid and bought the bridge. And this ubiquitous appendage rules their lives. They cannot or will not put them down. If you have control of your life, refusing to allow an inanimate object to control you, you are in the small minority. 97% of Americans live on their portable propaganda portals. My cell phone sits on the seat next to me or in the little cup holders in between. If a sound goes off that I've got a message, I don't care. I wait until I'm at a stoplight. I'm not playing the game. There's too many insane idiots out there. Is it reasonable to forego observations to follow a leprechaun to his pot of gold or continue to chase these mythical promises to oblivion? Will the sheeple of America play ostrich and bury their collective heads in the sand or other places? For plausible deniability, like I don't know, or nobody told me, or I thought I was, but that was the government's job. Or maybe finally take personal responsibility for the direction of their republic. I know. Charlie says he keeps repeating the same old cliche. America is our country. This is our republic. It is ours to keep, and therefore it is ours to lose. And what Charlie sees and what he hears is that too few citizens give a tinker's damn any longer. We owe all the people who sacrifice for our liberty, thank you, but you need to consider that the remaining patriots will write the same check. Write the check? What check? A veteran patriot is someone who, at one point in their life, wrote a blank check made payable to the United States of America for an amount up to and including their life. What are we doing to honor that sacrifice? If life exists on other planets and galaxies, why would they want to contact us? Why the hell would they want to come here? We are intractable. We are arrogant. We cannot even live together. We kill each other for ridiculous reasons. We corrupt everything for profit. What do we have to offer to any other civilization? Everyone thinks of changing the world, but no one thinks of changing himself. Leo Tolstoy. People, I might submit that many have dishonored all the patriots who serve this republic. They are my brother and sister patriots. And one of my brothers was just here last week from New York. And when he left, he went over to see our other brother that we were in Vietnam with as well, over in California. We're hoping the three of us to get together in March or April of this year. In the words of Charles, I offer no apology. Thank you, my friend. It is interesting as we grow older to find other people who think the way we do, but maybe that's because of the way we were raised or the fact that we've grown of a certain age. I had an interesting conversation with someone calling me today. I think I share with you that Raymond took me to see the VA people to try to get me set up to get some benefits, et cetera, et cetera. I'm a strange bird. 4.5 years in the military, and I got out January the 7th of 1970. 3 weeks later, through a blind date, I met the woman who I'm still married to 53 years later. Never once have I had the desire to go after VA benefits. I didn't feel that they owed me a damn thing. I went to serve my country. And I feel I did so well. Charles did the same. And there's so many of others of us that did the same thing. Doesn't mean you had to take my approach when you came home. There were many that did what they felt they had to do. I had an interesting call from the VA today. Turns out that the guy that Raymond and I met with a couple weeks ago, or a week or so, a week and a half ago, didn't take me down the right path. We've got it straightened out now. The gal that called me, we talked on the phone for 40 minutes this morning. We got some things straightened out, and I am going to go meet with them. There may be some reason that could be beneficial. There's others of you in the same situation. But given all that we've just spoken of, this first 20-odd minutes of this second hour, the challenges, the thoughts that we have, the considerations that we have to have, the angers that we have, in many cases, we just decide it's time to just turn our head and say, screw the neighbor. That's their problem. But the question we have to pose is, given all that's going on right now, what's next? Are we, in fact, facing another civil war? I go back and use the quote of Charles Dickens' great-great-grandfather. well-known author. And what few people realize is how much of a political commentator he was during his age, his years. I think my friend Charles Dickens, the blues man, has as equal a talent of his great-great-grandfather. His writing ability, his ability to get the right things said, to wake it up. But Charles Dickens, the great-great-grandfather, said, the most important thing in life is to stop saying, I wish, and start saying, I will. I know about far too many things that no longer matter. Antiquated ideals like honor, commitment. Charles says that he understands what words actually mean. And because of that, he uses them carefully. He defends the need for police, for law, for order. Embraces the intent of our laws and the Constitution. He, as so many of us, know right from wrong. We learn from our parents, our church, our school. We all learned at a young age, most of us did, that lying was wrong. We cannot rationalize it as free speech or freedom of expression the way our government or mainstream media does. Claiming that a lie is protected by freedom of the press does not make it true or acceptable. Theft is theft, irrespective of the value of the goods or the rationale for tolerating or enabling it. As most of us do, we believe in our constitutional republic, not the fascist plutocracy intended by the National Socialist, National American Socialist Party. Because I believe in America's original tenets, not what it's become. Now, Nationalist American Socialist Party, as Charles notes, the National American Socialist Party is his fictitious creation, invention, used to describe the multitude of fringe elements operating within our republic to undermine and destroy our way of life, to inculcate a new social order. There is no official Nationalist American Socialist Party. At least in reality. And yet in reality, it certainly exists. Consider things like this. The First Amendment implies that one takes responsibility for our own individual actions. And invoking freedom of whatever does not absolve or lessen that responsibility. There's no substitute for nuclear families with mothers and fathers in the same home. Predictable calamities stem from incenting women to breed for money in a fatherless home. And its sweeping impact on American society by the welfare state bears all of that out. Oh, Charles continues, he knows that America is an experiment, and like any experiment, when things go wrong, you stop doing them. You make the necessary changes to restore balance and then try something different. When one smashes their finger with a hammer, you'd be more careful the next time. You don't do the same thing the same way. You change your process to prevent another injury, or you get the similar or same result. We like to think that one learns from, or you learn from your mistakes. I mean, I was taught at a very young age that failure is a great teacher. It is the source of wisdom. Repeating mistakes means you have a learning disability. expecting different results from identical efforts defines insanity. Well, my friends, like it or not, America has a learning disability. QED, America's misrepresentatives. And many of our citizens are, they're purely insane. We face and deal with communism, Marxism, socialism, fascism, totalitarianism, nationalism. Those and most other isms don't work. They didn't work last time. Ain't gonna work this time. As a matter of fact, they'll never work. It doesn't matter which country, which century. They don't work. Our constitutional republic is the best possible solution. May not be perfect, but it works if you work with it and stop trying to manipulate it. Simple. A sailboat functions with the wind, but it does not attempt to control the wind. I know the cardinal points on the moral compass and their ethical intent. Occasionally I make the wrong choice. But if we do, we generally learn from that experience. Charles says his moral compass works just fine because he believes in something bigger than himself. Edgar Allan Poe once said, "The time will arrive when you will learn to judge for yourself of what is going on in the world without trusting to the gossip of others. Believe nothing you hear, and only one half that you see." Well, Charles returns to the Nationalist Socialist, American Socialist Party, their present course. What we encounter from our government proves that Lord Acton's axiom that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. His observation that a person's sense of morality decreases as his power increases is, shall we say, unassailable. Last year, Charles theorized about the NASP's rationale for placing Captain China Joey at the helm of our sinking ship of state, proposing that NASP's ultimate plan was to maybe take over America by first running it into the rocks, necessitating martial law. Didn't Obama? That's the NASP's icon or holy image. Didn't Obama promise to fundamentally transform America? He planned to generate sufficient civil unrest, pressing the fractured republic into civil war, thus necessitating government intervention by mobilizing the military to save democracy. Something we would call a coup d'etat. That's what Charles sees where America's going. Another civil war, if there is such a thing as a civil war. I've never seen one. And I agree with him on that. I've openly said that when they call that the civil war, America's civil war, there wasn't a damn thing that was civil about it. There are those of us who openly refer to it as the war of northern aggression. Charles says the only war he witnessed was anything but cordial or kind. The alleged purpose is always to preserve democracy. And that's the rationalization the military-industrial congressional complex uses to hustle more money and snatch more power in every war they ever provoked. Thinking any war can be civil is preposterous. Excuse me, but that's just another word for bullshit. Look, our enemies mean business. They want to obliterate us. Wake up, people. I'll be damned if that's not where we're headed unless we extract our collective craniums from our rectums. Cease this lunacy. Turn our republic around pretty damn quick. Because we're headed down a slippery slope. And by this, Charles means all the divisive posturing and the hatred. Everybody's fighting each other because of some concocted ideology distracting us from what should be our focus. And that focus should be maintaining this constitutional republic and ensuring life and liberty and prosperity for everyone. But you see, my friends, that's not part of their plan. They need us to hate and fight with one another. The NASP claims that the other guys are evil because they don't look and act or speak or pray like us. Now, individuality is unacceptable. Nonconformity will not be tolerated in the NASP's new world order. You know, a brief history of the Democratic Party shows that they defended slavery. They supported the war of Northern aggression. They opposed Reconstruction. They founded the KKK, that's the Ku Klux Klan. They imposed segregation, perpetrated lynching, fought against the Civil Rights Acts of the 1950s and 60s, and began the wars in Korea and Vietnam. Democratic Party is associated with the term military-industrial congressional complex, a phrase coined by President Dwight David Eisenhower in his 1961 farewell address. Eisenhower, of course, is Republican, but an old-style Republican. The new-style Republicans? Forget it. They're just as bad as the demon craps. And by the way, Lincoln's assassination, his assassin, John Wilkes Booth, he was a Democrat. Oh, they proved that they would turn on their own and probably eat their children in service to their cause for the Democrats and any partisan political permutation. For that matter, the end justifies the means. The party across the aisle is no group of angels. The Republicans stood against the propagation of slavery. They were associated with laissez-faire government, low taxes, conservative social policies. But the Republican Party started the war of Northern aggression. They started the Gulf War, the wars in Afghanistan, Iraq, and the war on terror. You see, both of these parties are just as bad as the other one. But they play little games. I'm a Democrat. I'm a Republican. So what's the difference? And so what we feel, what we deal with today is fascism. A historical word for nationalist socialism. A far-right form of government in which most of the country's power is held by one ruler or a small group under a single party. Fascist governments are usually totalitarian, authoritarian, one-party states. Under fascism, the economy and other parts of society are heavily and closely controlled by the government, generally using authoritarian corporatism, where companies and workers are supposed to work together under national unity. But the government uses violence and police power to arrest and kill or stop anyone it does not think is beneficial. I challenge you later tonight to reread that definition. Weigh this description against the current events in America. Isn't this a summation of our last 75 years? Or maybe more especially the past 25 years? Our government's power grows as our positions shift from citizen to serf and our involvement fades from participant to passenger. My friends, there's nothing altruistic about an authoritarian regime bent on the subjugation of a country, of its people. There's nothing egalitarian about socialism or Marxism or fascism. There's no democratic leanings about them. Their sole purpose is to supplant the existing way of life, to embed total domination. The events of the past quarter century and America's reticence for course corrections demonstrate the NASP's acolytes' resolve to take any steps necessary to complete its heinous plan. A plan that's nearing fruition, I might add. They've also shown a total disregard for this constitutional republic's rule of law by weaponizing the Department of Justice against their political rivals. They flaunt, they twist precedents to their purposes, they flagrantly reinterpret them to support nefarious ends. And their Stasi-like use of the FBI and the corporate media is indicative of the measures employed to serve the goal of moving this republic in a fascist direction. You know, the Obama regime installed fascist-leaning operatives in influential positions in city, state, and federal government to infect these administrations with the party's doctrine of anti-American sentiments. The results are evident, people. Crime, poverty, illiteracy, ignorance, apartheid, narrow-mindedness. All of these things are burgeoning exponentially, fortifying their resolve and ensuring our downhill slide. You keep coming back to Obama. Why? You think Joey Biden is running anything? I think Joe Biden was chosen for that very reason. Obama's still calling the shots. I've been convinced of that for a long, long time. So we deal with the NASP and their influence on academia. It's indisputable. One considers the horrendous pro-Hamas rallies, the racist attacks against Jewish students, the anti-Semitic sentiment from the college boards of directors and the faculty. It's all obvious where the impressionable students learn this vile filth. That institutes of higher learning should encourage learning, not leftist totalitarian indoctrination. You got to remember their motto, the end justifies the means. And state governments attempt to constrain our constitutional rights to free and open elections by convenient reinterpretation of the 14th Amendment and its stated conditions to exclude a specific candidate. All of that is some real third world banana republic crap. They claim that denying this constitutional right to choose our representatives is their means of preserving what I call democracy. Let me tell you something, folks. They would burn down the house to prevent arson. Think about that. What we've experienced over these past several years is only a preview of coming catastrophes, my friends. An epic farce in practice. Their retribution is so vicious that no one dared raise the alarm with the NASP predisposed to punish political adversaries who would dare stand in defiance. But I guess that's how fascism works. Coup d'etat implies the unlawful seizure of government power using military force. In Obama's masterful, manipulative maneuver. Martial law will be employed to save the country from imminent destruction at the hands of the MAGA conservatives. You know, the Make America Great Again conservatives. The rationale for the coup is to use martial law to preserve the democracy it will destroy. Burn down the house to prevent arson. Look, martial law, by the way, is not a character in a Wild West Western movie. Martial law is the use of military force for civilian rule. Wake up and understand that. I mean, suppose the conservatives were to mutiny and democracy was breaking down, an insurrection. Well, martial law could be imposed. The fascist leadership with Obama as emperor would be secured for all time for saving the country from the ravages of the super-duper, ultra-uber-mega onslaught of the anti-democratic and anti-American MAGA Republicans. I mean, it looks a lot better historically than a military coup d'etat. You see, it's all about the optics. History aficionados will recall the Nazis, the National Socialist German Workers' Party, rose to power in the late 1920s by employing a similar technique. Nazi Germany blamed the Jews, and ANSP blames the MAGA conservatives who were allegedly under the hypnotic spells of Mr. Orange Man, Donald J. Trump. The NASP insists that J is for Judas Insurrectionist. Incidentally, the corporate media refer to Mr. Trump as the Antichrist. Obama's the admiral. Mastermind of this effort with China Joey at the helm, the ship of state America can hit the rocks. Obama's legacy is secure since no one will ever know he's the architect of the coup. It happened on China Joey's useful idiot's watch. No one may ever comprehend this nefarious plan was Obama's. The NASP coup d'etat strategy is to create irreparable divisions in our republic, pitting citizens against each other and the illegal alien army they're building with their open borders and lies. Tension will escalate to civil unrest, open street warfare requiring a military solution to restore order. Consider that the events on January the 6th of 2021 were merely a warm-up for the DOJ and the professionally orchestrated kangaroo court proceeding. The DOJ identified, sentenced, and incarcerated suspected participants. The NASP considered the show trial due process, and many remained in solitary confinement, denied a fair trial and access to exculpatory evidence. Guilty, never to be proven innocent. Why do you imagine that most of the geographically disenfranchised people invading our republic are military age males? Well, these invaders claim to want jobs, but when facing imminent prosecution and deportation, they will take the king's shilling, citizenship and pardon. They will join the NASP army, gaining a green card and all the rights reserved for citizens. The NASP is importing all illegals legion for their insurrection. The NASP coup d'etat. And so in a roundabout way, we are coming full circle back to the beginning of the first hour. Keep in mind, democracy is one of the worlds repurposed by this NASP regime. Democracy means government by the people, in which the supreme power is vested in the people, you and I, and exercised directly by us, or as their elected agents are directed under a free electoral system. The NASP's redefined version means whether and whatever advances their agenda, and it rationalizes their actions. You've got to remember this, my friends. The end justifies the means. But Charles says it saddens him to realize that the viral system we face is anything but free. It is enabled by legal wrangling and misconstrued language. There is interference at every level and in every partisan political party. Each vies for power to impose their interpretation of freedom and control on the citizenry. The intention is not to serve the republic, but to own it, to control it. After all, those we elect know what's best for everyone because being selected imbues them with unique insights, which makes them special. And these and several other situations caused Charles to wonder about an adult deficiency in this adolescent world. Can anyone tell us which generations marked the death of maturity, or has our demise been so gradual that it was imperceptible? Fortunately, we managed to elect a few grown-ups, but most are children with more problems than they promised to solve. They bring their insecurities and childish needs for attention to our government. Maybe a good old-fashioned spanking would be in order, figuratively and literally. From the book of Proverbs 13, verse 24, those who spare discipline hate their children, but those who love them are diligent to discipline them. It is interesting the things that I come across working with Charles Dickens. I get daily things from Pinterest. Sometimes it's just pictures of babes and all that kind of stuff, and it's fine. But it's surprising to me how many different images of the works of Charles Dickens, my friend's great-great-grandfather, that comes before me. And there's one that came across in front of me about a week ago. I reproduced the book cover, the piece written by my friend's great-great-grandfather called Bleak House. My friends, we are truly living in a bleak house. And of course, I have to play the game, and I took this image and published it along with that comment that we're truly living in a bleak house. This hour has been dedicated solely to the writings and the words of my friend Charles Dickens. I hope you've enjoyed it. I invite you, if you'd care to do so, to go visit federalobserver.com tonight. Both of these articles are published there on the front page. They're not right on top of each other. Charles had gone without writing for some weeks. Frustration, anger, confusion. And all of a sudden, within a matter of days, he slammed me two articles. Go enjoy them. I thank you for your time tonight. As usual, I extend without apology. I am Jeffrey Bennett. I'll see you next week. Good night.
These are the days of the open hand. We will not be the last. Look around now, these are the days of the beggars and the choosers. This is the year of the hungry man, whose place is in the past.
hand in hand with ignorance and legitimate excuses. The rich declare themselves poor, and most of us are not sure if we have it too much, but we're taking our chances, say. I sang 20 years and a day, but nothing changed. The human race found some other guy and walked into the flame. It's hard to love, there's so much to hate. Hanging on to hope when there is no hope to speak out. Wounded skies above say it's much too late. Then maybe we should all be praying for time. To what you can, and charity, charity is the coat you wear twice a year. Yeah, this is the year of the guilty man. Your television takes a stand, and you find that what was over there is over here. So you scream from behind your door. Say what's mine is mine and not yours. I may have too much, but I'll take all my chances. Say, I sang it 20 years and a day. There's nothing changed. The human race found some other guy and walked into the flames. It's hard to love. Jesus, there's so much to hate. Hanging on to war, there is no hope to speak out. And the wounded skies above say it's much too late. Then maybe we should all be praying for time.
Tom Bolton for Ease Off. I know so many of you are finding our Easy 4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation, but today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC. 417-932-6419.
You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today, because you can handle the truth.